Welcome to another episode of Living an Ultralife. This one may be just insane, as we still have a couple people joining us, but this is the entire crew that finished the Swami Shuffle 200 last Friday around noontime after an epic battle with Mother Nature. And so we're going to kind of go around the room and introduce each person. And we're going to start with our senior member, the one with the most finishes, Mr. Mike Edwards.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Edwards. I think I'm competing with Mike H as far as he wants to catch up to me, and I'm trying to keep away from him. So I have five finishes. I believe he has three.
Yep.
There you go. Yep. All right, and next we're going to go to the youngest, I believe, Mr. Danny Diaz.
Hey, good evening, folks. This is Danny Diaz. This is first time doing the Swami Shuffle, and I'm otherwise known as AKA Baby Seal.
There's a story behind that. So we'll move on. Mr. Steve Brockman.
Good evening, everybody. Steve Rockman. This was my second year of the Swami Shuffle. It was definitely an adventure. Kind of used to some of this stuff, but not quite this many days.
There you go. And next up, Mr. Clean Shaven, Joel Herman.
Hello, everybody. Joel Herman here. I'm a two-time Swami finisher now. And like I said last year, you know, I'm just going to support next year. But when it gets closer to the Swami Shuffle, I'll go ahead and throw myself on the wait list. And if I get the invite, well, then, you know, I have to do it, right? So that's my story.
There you go. And you're sticking to it.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Let's go to our favorite Canuck and world-class shell gatherer, Mr. Eric McGee.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Eric McGee, the Canuck from Canada, from Quebec. And first-time finisher. Having a lot of fun with this one.
There you go. That is awesome. And everybody's favorite aid station person. I'm saving the best for last in case you're wondering. So Lois and Jim, are you guys both on?
We are here. Hi, I'm Lois and my husband is Jim, and we are residents here on the Outer Bank and made a connection with Peter last year at another race. So we just wanted to see and greet him, and we became fans and the aid people for Mike and Danny and Peter. So, and some of you we said hi to in my pink Jeep along the way. So nice to get that picture of you all finishing together for sure.
That is awesome. And of course, how can we forget the glue that held us all together? Mr. Penguin, Peter.
Hi, good evening. I'm Peter Wei. This is my second finish of the Swami and AKA Papa Seal.
Okay, are we going to go with Papa Seal or Penguin? What do you think, Danny?
Papa Seal.
All right, okay, Papa Seal it is. Although, you know, the Penguin story is going to come out. And we just got joined by the world-class, awesome, wonderful, incredible dude who took a lot of weight off our table and also helped get Steve Brockman to the finish. Skip is joining us. So, Skip, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure, I'm Skip. I'm Steve's brother-in-law, and I had nothing better to do than drive around the Outer Banks for a week.
It was such a blast. All right, so let's start out with that first day. So let's start with Peter. When you saw the weather and what it was like jumping off onto the start of this race, what was the first thought that kind of went through your head?
Well, I think this is going to be epic. I don't like cold, I don't like rain, and I don't like running. So it's going to be quite challenging, I would say. So, and I got a baby seal with me, so you can't really push too hard, you know?
Right.
And so I finally decided halfway, like just beginning, I said, I don't think we're going to make it to 64 mile that we're going to want to do it. But I didn't tell anyone. But, you know, trying to be cool about it.
Yep. All right. So Baby Seal, Danny, what was your first thought? You're setting out on your first 200-mile run. What was going through your head at the beginning?
Well, first off, I would say with the weather was, I mean, it was like drizzle at 6, 7, it picked up, and on at the start line, it was a full-blown gust. Like the rain was diagonal. And at that point, I was like, okay, I've been through rough training before, but this has to eat the cake out of all the races I've done. And at the beginning, I was like, you know what? One step at a time. I just got to stay with Peter. I got to survive, and I got to move, and I got to keep up. And with God's graciousness, there was a lot of goodness in that day. But man, he threw everything you could have, with the exception of like lava or some crazy sharks. But we had everything. I
It
mean, we
was
had everything in
wild.
that first day.
Yeah. It's incredible. So, Mike, this is your fifth time. Have you ever seen a start like that before?
Mike, last year we were running through snow to get onto the beach, if you remember.
Yep.
It's not epic, getting soaked. And then, what, 3 years ago, we were running in rain, but nothing compared to what we witnessed last weekend. So,
Yeah, 3 years ago is rain like it was on Thursday, where it's raining, but it's not like pushing you sideways.
I'm grateful that we had the rain to our back. So, well, at least for me. I don't know if it changed course after I got off the beach. I was more or less just trying to follow Steve, I'm trying to think of his last name now.
Dense.
And because I'm figuring I'm wearing a full rain kit, he's wearing shorts, and it's like this guy's has is bigger than I am, so bigger balls than I am. I'm just gonna stay with him, so.
Awesome. So, Steve, this was your second shot at Swami, and obviously you started, last year with kind of beautiful weather at the start. So, what was going through your head as you're getting started on this one?
Well, I can't do anything the easy way. So last year the weather was just too beautiful, and I wasn't challenging enough. So I had to stop midway to wait till this year to get the full effect of the Swami Shuffle. But I kind of prepared. I was lucky to get some pretty rainy days up here in Roanoke, so I was doing some raining and cold weather training. But you just do one step in front of the other and just. Constantly change your mindset and keep adjusting, right? I mean, that's what this is all about, right?
Exactly.
Once you have a challenge, you find a different way around it and you just keep pushing forward. So
There
it
you
was a
go.
great challenge.
Good deal. So Joel, same thing. This was your second year. You had a perfect weather year last year. What was going through your head at the start of this race?
So at the start of this race, I knew the weather was going to be bad, but I also knew that the weather was going to improve. And I was just telling myself, "Hey, look, you're going through this bad weather when you're at your strongest point. So just weather the storm, pun intended, and the weather's going to improve." So I didn't really think about it. I just kind of dealt with it, and I knew the weather was going to improve. So that was my whole mindset at the start. I didn't want to get bogged down thinking about how bad that weather was. I do think.
Awesome.
On the back end, if I would have hit this at my weakest point, it probably would have knocked me out of the race.
So, Eric, a lot of these guys may not know, but you've actually got a lot of experience at these multi-day races and 200 milers and stuff. But this was your first time actually starting out on a beach, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first time on the beach, I was doing a Swami Shuffle as a training for UK run I'm going to do in the next month. So I was more than pleased to get bad weather because it got a good training for me.
Right, because you're probably going to hit rain when you hit England, right?
Yeah, for sure. So
That is awesome. That is
that's a
awesome.
good training. Actually, I had a lot of fun until we hit the city of Dock with the snow coming out. That's when I say, okay. A different story there.
Yeah, I didn't believe the weathermen, when they were saying that it was going to start snowing. I was like, kid, they're always wrong. They were right once, so they get that. All right. So Skip, you drop Steve off at the start line. You drive that wonderful, 2.5, 3 hours down to where you meet him the first time in the weather and everything. What's going through your head?
I mean, that part is really kind of surreal because you guys are going 20 miles or so, and I'm driving 130 or something, 120. And the main thing that I'm thinking about, especially considering the weather and the temperatures, that I just wanted to make sure that I beat him there. I misremembered from last year how far it was, and I was a little worried that I wasn't going to get there in time. So I just wanted to make sure that I was there in case he needed anything when the time came.
Okay, awesome. So, Lois, you met Peter, Danny, and I, and my wife, the forever girlfriend, at the lighthouse. What was going through your head when you and Jim saw us at the lighthouse?
I was just on the whole way up riding there, even though we got early, I was just like, I just can't believe this is the weather they have. It was just like, you guys pulled in, it was pouring down rain, you were soaking wet, it was cold. I mean, I was just kind of stunned. Jim, were you like,
I was shocked.
yep.
And you guys looked great. You were freezing, shaking a little bit, but hey, it was all good. You guys look great.
So we all started out. I think Peter and Danny and I, we were the only ones that stopped at the lighthouse, right? Did everybody else went on to the food line, right? Mike?
I did go to the food line. Actually, I went to Nelly's, which is right behind the food line. We
Okay.
stopped at my normal stop is Uncle Ike's, but I knew it was going to be closed at that shopping center, that first shopping center. So, but Steve and I walked through there because there were so many cars for a Sunday afternoon. So we were hoping something else was open, and but we continued going south. And then when we saw some billboard at the food lines kind of behind, it took us a little while to figure out where it was. But yeah, then I stopped into the food line after lunch or dinner.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's talk about the journey down. Now we're on pavement. Rain still coming down, but we got a little bit of the break from the wind. So when did it really set into you that, because a lot of us had the plans to at least get to the Comfort Inn the first night. And when did that thought start to kind of go out of your head? And we'll start with Joel on this one.
Well, I think I was good for the until I got to the KOA. I was right on schedule or ahead of schedule. So my first stop was going to be the Hilton, and
Okay.
I hit it pretty early, 6:30 p.m. I was at the Hilton, and still feeling pretty good. Just had a bunch of wet stuff, but I was dry underneath. And from leaving the Hilton, just with a couple hours of sleep, heading down to the KOA, and I was still right on track at that point.
Okay. And were you pretty much solo?
Yes.
Or when did you catch up? When did you meet up with Coastie and start going with Coastie?
So Coasty showed up to the Hilton about an hour and a half after me, and then he actually left an hour and a half after me. I left right at midnight, and he left at 1:30, and then
Okay.
we met up at the at his room at the KOA, and from the KOA is when we decided that we were going to stick together for as long as possible. So I did what the first probably 85, is it 85 to the KOA? I
85
did the first,
KOA, yeah.
85 to the KOA by myself, and then ended up doing 90 with Coastie before, I was just too slow, and he, had goals, and he was feeling good to have a Thursday finish. And so he just kind of pushed out ahead of me around Nag's Head some point on the way back.
Okay. And were you kind of thinking Wednesday finish or Thursday finish?
Yeah, going in, I was thinking Wednesday or Thursday, but
Okay.
definitely wasn't thinking another Friday finish. But hey, those things happen, and you just got to adjust. And it didn't matter. I had a goal in mind, and when the goal just wasn't going to work out, then the goal just became, hey, let's just finish this up,
There you go.
So.
Perfect. So, Eric, what was your, I mean, when did it kind of hit you that you were going to adapt kind of your plans and stuff? Was it that first day, or did you, were you, was your intention to get to the Hilton the first day?
I had no planning at all. I was going with the wave. So
Okay.
I actually, it's when I, after the Food Lion, I meet up with Mike, and he gave me some cues on the race, and that's where I'm started. That's when I started to plan, basically. And then I say, okay, I'm gonna go to get Comfort Inn. And then once I got into dock with the snow, I say, oh no, forget about that. I'm gonna stop at the Elton and take it
Okay.
from there.
Okay, perfect. So, Mike, what about you? You were always kind of going to the Hilton, weren't you?
I was my plans was to go to the first Holiday Express.
Oh, okay. So around mile 50.
Sorry, but having dinner with Steve, apparently the Hilton used to be a little bit more upscale. You used to have to get room service. So he said previous years that he would check in, get room service for dinner and a sandwich for the next day. He would hop in the shower, finish, kind of clean up, and then hop in the bed. And by that time, his food was ready. So it's like, well, that sounds like a great idea. So, but when I got in there, they obviously changed the format, kind of like the rest of the hotels. But then that's when I
Yep.
saw Peter eating his lovely dinner, and that's when I met Jim and Lewis. So, and then we just someone's asking me to take all my clothes off. They're going to take it home. So.
There you go. Hey, that's always a good deal. Take all my clothes and dry them. No problem. So, Steve, what was kind of your plan? Was it just make it as far as you could that first day, or did you have a set in stone plan?
Yeah, Peter will yell at me for this. I didn't have a real plan in sight. Since I had the flexibility of Skip and his amazing support, I was just gonna kind of stick around the 50-mile-ish mark and see where that landed us to camp out for the night. And that was the plan I had the previous year, and it seemed to work out pretty good. But my main goal was to enjoy the scenery and make some friends and just let it not push the speed, but let the speed, determine for me instead of trying to push too hard like I did last year.
Was there any scenery that first day? All I remember is rain and snow and wind.
Well, that's still considered scenery. It may not be the
There
best, but it's definitely scenery.
you go. Freezing puddles.
Oh,
Yes.
yes. All right.
Yes.
So here we go. How many people got splashed at least one time on the section from Duck to the Hilton Garden Inn? Steve?
Yeah, I definitely got splashed once, and if it wasn't by cars, it was by us running ourselves through the water.
Right. Mike, what about you?
Yep, I agree with that statement. I think that the headlight didn't really give you a depth of the puddles, and we didn't know about it until Eric and I stepped through the puddles. So.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to Papa Seal, our glue man, the people gatherer, Peter. Tell us about once we left the food line. So what were you thinking when we left the lighthouse?
Well, I mean, I wasn't broken, but I'm looking at the baby seal. His face is telling me something. So I don't want to break anybody, our goal is to finish the race. So I said, okay, we got to take it really easy and trying to make it to the Hilton ex garden. That's the 45 mile. I'm thinking that would be great. We're not going to finish Thursday, forget it. It's just gonna, I'm gonna go with the Mike Edwards style, party bus. I'm okay with this. And yeah, that was a very easy for me to, like it was easy decision, right? Like I don't want to suffer. So like, okay. And Danny can make it too. And of course, with you, like great company. So yeah.
So how many people did you gather that first day? 'Cause you were just like a people gatherer. Every time I would, stop or wait for you guys, it seemed like you had more people in your tow. How many people did you gather?
I think Don is one of them. Steve was standing waiting for me, so I asked him, "Hey, what are you doing?" Like, it's like, and then we probably going the same speed. At that point, you were ahead of us. I know you were cold, and I was waiting for Danny in the back, and so I just gonna stay in the middle, just in case anybody need help. Then Steve came along, so we are talking, and then I told him about my plan, like this, it's going to be really bad right now. So the best way is a 45-mile regroup and then see what happened next day. And yeah, I think I met a few people. I don't remember. I was talking to a lot of people. So.
Yes, you were. It was awesome. It's so much fun to watch you do it. So, Danny, at what point did you go, okay, I just got to put my head down, make sure I keep up with Peter and just keep moving ahead solidly.
Well, let's just say after that lighthouse, when I started moving again, at some point in time, I think we made it past the little town. I think we had passed Art, and then at some point in time, I had lost you guys. You guys had moved on. I couldn't run to keep up. So all I remember is what Peter told me from a couple of days before that. And he's like, "Hey, we're gonna do 62 miles first day." And I was just like, somewhere in Kitty Hawk, there's a hotel. And I was like, okay, all right, great. The sun went down, time ran out, temperature started getting cold, it started raining again, and then the winds picked back up and it got cold. Luckily, at that point, somewhere, I can't remember exactly where I had lost you guys had started stepping it out. But what ended up happening was, hey, I saw somebody coming out of a restroom. I jumped in, put on an extra layer of clothes, and at that point, it hadn't completely started getting drenched and had started going through duck. When I went through duck, I was about to pass, I guess it was a bar slash pizza place, and then there was a place called Barrier Island. When I got to that area, the water was cresting over the pier. The foam was being brushed off with the wind. The rain was pretty much pelting and it was really cold. And I saw somebody sitting in a little hut. Their phone, the light was just flashing on their face. And I was like, there's somebody in there and they're alive. And I asked them, hey, can I put on an extra warming layer? Do you guys have a restroom? They looked at me befuddled, kind of like, what the fuck are you doing outside? And I was like, is there a restroom? And then the guy gets up and he says, there's a restroom over there. You're welcome to use it. And I walk in there, put an extra layer, and I get my phone out and I call Peter, and God's gracious is good. Peter answers. And I was like, hey, dude, I'm at 39. You guys said something about 62. And he's like, we're 2 miles ahead of you. And like the hotel is like 4 or 5 miles from us. And so I was like, assuming that was probably be like anywhere from 6 to 7. It was probably around, sun had set, I would say probably 6 o'clock time. And at that point, I put all my stuff back on, put my bag back on. I had enough motivation to go back into the thick of it. I said thank you to the people at the hut, and then I just started stepping through gobs and gobs of puddles, and then it started snowing, and that pretty much left it there.
That snow was shocking to me. So, Lois, I guess was I the first one that you saw come in the at the
Absolutely.
hymn?
We were sitting at that Hilton Garden Inn. We were waiting for you guys, and you came in, and I just said to Jim, start getting all that stuff off him.
We start undressing you.
Yeah, I will say that I sort of recall you getting all the wet stuff off of me, but I don't recall. I do remember Lois said, "Stand by the fireplace. It's not a real fireplace, but maybe the flames will fool your body into thinking it's warm."
Yeah,
That's the only thing I remember.
put your butt up against the glass. Maybe it will help. But it was like, get all that wet stuff off of you. The guys in the hotel lobby were super nice. They brought hot water over. We asked them for towels for you guys, and they, no problem. They brought us everything we asked for. They were super nice.
Oh, they were amazing. They were amazing. I need to drop them a thank you note because they were lifesavers. Because I think I was like on the very tips of hypothermia at that point because my whole upper body had shut down and I couldn't feel anything. So that was fun. So then the next morning we start out. So Mike, what time did you guys leave? Because you left earlier than us.
I was with Dave. He wanted to leave at 5. I knew from Pete that he was going to leave after breakfast, which I would agree to that. But I know Peter's a lot faster than I am, and I can pretty much keep up with Dave. So we went out at 5.
Okay, so you went out at 5. And who all went out with you?
I can't recall off the top of my head right now, so.
I was the one we did a lot of we went to the McDo and KFC together.
Okay, so did you leave at 5 with Mike then, or okay?
I just happened to get out of the in the lobby, and then I saw Mike, Daryl, and Dave all going out at the same
Daryl,
time. So we went together at the four of us. But me and Mike were a bit faster than Dave and Daryl, so we got to the McDo first, and they
Okay.
just pop in.
And then somewhere, did Don Knotts leave about the same time as you guys, or how did you guys end up with Don?
We all met at the McDonald's. My intention was to go to McDonald's and then go to 7-Eleven after that. I do know Dave said he was going to bypass the McDonald's and stop at 7-Eleven, but when Eric and I pulled in, everyone it seemed like everyone else pulled in too. Now, by that time, I had already called Peter saying, "Hey, don't wait for us at breakfast. We've already started already." So my intention was to be at the McDonald's.
Okay. And Steve, what time did you get started that second day?
I think we got up, got going. It was later than most people. It was around 7:38 when I started heading out.
Cool. Yeah, because I left at 6:30 because we thought breakfast opened at 6:30, and I got all my stuff on and went downstairs and found out it didn't start till 7. So I told Peter, I said, I'm going to go ahead and just book it, and I'll stop. I thought there was a coffee shop on North Carolina 12. There's not. I must have been
Oh, boy.
fantasizing that. So I had to get the 7-Eleven fare and beg the guy to let me stand inside and drink my coffee and eat my sandwich. He was highly put out that I was in his 7-Eleven that was empty when I got there. But whatever. So, and then let's see. So then Joel, you had left what at like 1:30, right?
I left the Hilton at midnight, and by 7 in the morning, I was sitting in the bathroom at the Oregon Inlet Fishing Center.
Oh,
So
wow.
I was still moving pretty good, and I was
Yeah.
a little disappointed. I thought that the fishing center or something was going to be open there to get me something hot, but
Nothing.
I was mistaken there. So,
So
but
how did you just refill your water bladders and stuff from the sink or what?
I think I was still pretty well refilled because I resupplied myself at the 7-Eleven, the last 7-Eleven
Okay.
before you and I didn't go through Nag's Head. I took the highway
Oh,
right
you took
after
158. Okay.
yeah, and I didn't realize that last year I went through Nag's Head. This year I didn't do it, and so but I resupplied myself there at that 7-Eleven, and I was still good to go at the KOA, or still good to go at the Oregon Inlet Fishing Center. I didn't really need to resupply myself there. I was still good on water, still good on electrolytes. I was fully stocked up on snacks. And from Oregon Inlet, I stayed there for maybe 45 minutes and stepped off and started moving again and arrived at the KOA early Monday afternoon.
Yeah, and you
So,
were the first one to get to the KOA, correct?
yep, I was. It's a funny story because Coastie had sent me a text message with the room number, and it was Mike and Joel as a group text, and I had made arrangements to share a KOA room with you. So all this time, I'm thinking it's Coastie, you, and myself in this text message. In actuality, it was myself, Mike Edwards, and Coastie. So. That's
Awesome.
why I never ended up staying in your room. I ended up staying in Coastie's room. So,
That's okay
but
because
yeah.
I got to sleep with Papa Bear that night, so it's all good. It's all good. So
funny story too. I think it was Eric, Coastie and I on our return trip back, we're getting ready to step off, and we hear this little, it's in the middle of the night, and we hear this little knock on the door, and it's Eric standing at the door. And we're Coastie and we're
That is
like, how did
awesome.
Coastie and I were like, how did he know we were in this room? But I guess Eric heard us talking through the door, and
That's awesome.
so we're like, yeah, we're getting ready to leave. The whole room is yours. We got it till tomorrow or the next day. So take all your time you need there. So,
There
and
you
then
go.
so that's how
Well,
that worked on the way through.
I caught up with Mike and Dave and Darren, Don and Eric as they were getting, you guys were, we were probably about a mile away from the KFC. And so we all went to KFC together. I think Mike, you were already at the KFC, weren't you?
I was so,
Yeah.
and that's when we brought when Don came in, and was it you who said looked at his ankle? Well, someone
Yeah, I
said
looked
that.
at his ankle and was like, that's ugly, man. So, yeah. That was one of the few times that I've looked at an ankle and you know black and blue, but when you got the red streaks going up and Lois and Jim can kind of speak more to this, the red The very angry red streaks coming up from the black and the blue ankle. I was like, dude, that's not something that you want to be messing with. And so Lois and Jim, kind of as medical people, what would that be when there's like red streaks going up your leg? Is that like cellulitis? Were we right?
I mean, it definitely could be cellulitis. Old wives' tales would say that that was like a blood infection, whatnot, but it definitely could be. Cellulitis is of course, an infection of the cell. So again, with the pressure and the weight and the swelling, that could definitely be what's going on. It could also just be his circulation and the fact that it's
Circulation,
so cold and,
shin splints.
yeah, all that going on together can cause that too. I have to
Okay.
tell you, I do feel bad because, not that any of you would know this, but one of the things I hear you all saying about food and whatnot, and the sad part about it is what is open here is usually closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. For whatever reason, I always said the restaurant should rotate, like some should do Wednesday and Thursday, some should do Monday and Tuesday, but Monday and Tuesday, majority of stuff here closes down, which is sad. Yeah.
We found that out really well. We ate a lot of junk food this thing. So, yeah, it was fun. All right. So, let's get impressions of what I call Desolation Alley. That whole section from Bass Knight Bridge to the end of Jug Handle Bridge. Let's go with what time did you enter Desolation Alley, and how long did it take you to get through? And we'll start with Baby Seal, Danny.
So this one was from day two, right? When we
Yeah, day
crossed the
two.
big bridge and to
Yep.
P Island.
Yeah.
All right, so that big bridge was insane. I think so I will preface, Peter said no running on the bridge. And that day, so day two, I was feeling a lot better than day one, and I was running 0.25 and walking 0.25.
Okay.
And I think that really helped me out to focus. Once I got off the bridge, I went back to 0.25, run, walk 0.25, and then at some point in time, once I passed the visitor center, I had gone through the second little bridge in P Island. When I passed that, you go through that construction. There was some bulldozers doing some sand work, and then I passed two signs where they had pretty much stopped the traffic. At that point, that's when I had basically residual water in both of my bladders. And at that point, I stopped running. I was like, nope, I'm just going to walk it out from here on out. Took out the sticks. And I had passed most of the people that were on the P Island stretch at that point in time. And then I got onto the last bridge and the sun was setting. Basically, the sun had completely set. That last bridge was a lot longer than I expected. And temperature dropped. The good thing is you could see the stars, and it was a beautiful day on Monday, and
Yeah.
eventually made it to well, we did. The one person that surprised me, Mike Edwards, surprised me on the bridge because I looked back and I was like, I know there was somebody behind me, and I was like, where's their light? I didn't see a light, and I started talking to myself on the back end of that bridge, and then fucking Mike shows up out of nowhere, scared the shit out of me. And I was like, "Where's your light?" He's like, "I don't walk over the light." And then he's like, "I'm trying to make it to the Liberty Center before they close." And I was like, "Oh, you know what? I'll go with you." And we started hauling ass to. He was already hauling because he's a giant. And we show up to the Liberty Center, and there was a, I think a 4-door Suburban, and the two people were walking out of the gas station. And they're walking into the Suburban and they rolled out. And I was like, well, I guess that's closed now. So,
Yep.
but I think I had a good plan to stay focused. The hard part is I just moved forward in front of Peter because Peter's just super fast when he moves. And me keeping up with him by walking is not possible. I have to run or I have to jog or trot or whatever you call it.
There you go. All right, let's go to Papa Bear Peter.
Well, we started out that second day, right? 8 a.m. because we ate the breakfast, huge breakfast, and we pack it. So again, a night before, Lewis and Jim give us a dry clothes. I'm so thankful. I don't like cold,
Yeah, that was a
but
lifesaver.
Yeah, I came from Burma, like grew up in 100 degrees weather. Like it was cold though. I thought like, okay, that was great. Everything dry, so I'm very thankful. And I have, really good food, like quality food. I don't feel like to eat at Mickey D's and, like in the morning. That's why I said to you guys, just go, I will catch up. So as soon as I step out, Danny took off, like go ahead, I'll catch up with you. And then I found Steve like maybe a few miles later. So C and I like tag team and then trying to catch up with you guys, right? I trying to keep up like 3.6 mile per hour. That's like my calculation. And I think I'm gonna catch you guys at that rest area in P Island because you guys are going like three, especially Mike and the rest of the gang. So 3.5, 3.6. So we do a little bit of run walk, very short, like maybe 10 step, maybe. And so that was a plan, right? Not trying to break ourselves and really easy. So yeah. So trying to catch up. All the way to the KOA pretty much. We did not run on the bridge. I realized that these bridge concretes are super, super, super tough, right? Like average like 3 to 5,000 PSI. Bridge probably like 8 to 15,000 PSI. So imagine that. I have seen it before in the Blackbeard 100 milers. Most of the people that break down on the right after the bridge, right? They all have it like a shin splint. Like there's no way I gonna get one. So that's why I told Danny, do not run. Whatever you do, that is the hard concrete. You do not want to run that. So whether he listened or not, I don't know because I didn't see him till KOA, So
I think he did because Danny didn't start hurting until the third day.
well, damage is already done, I guess. Right? If he did ever run, that's like I'm very calculated guys, come down to
You
these.
are.
And I know what I want to do exactly. I thrive in the, chaotic situation. So
Well, and
this is
you also have this quality where you know what you need to do in order to catch up. So you're good at ultramath.
well. I'm the number guy. So, I keep my mind sharp too. That's why I told Steve, like, we got to think something, to keep it going and, motivated, right? Our motivation that trying to catch you guys. So we did. And that was cool. That was cool. Steve was a good
Yeah, it was,
company.
I actually had a good time through the through Desolation Alley. I that was probably my most enjoyable part of it. I maintain around 4 to 4.2 miles an hour and just plowed through it. Now, Jug Handle Bridge, I thought I was going to get over it before the sunset, but I got about halfway over and the sun sunk into the sound and man, it got dark quick. That was the thing that just struck me this time was how dark it got and how quick it got dark. It was trippy. But yeah, I got to the I finally got to the KOA after having a almost complete breakdown that my forever girlfriend had to talk me into. No, you have a half mile more to go to the KOA. And she talked me to the KOA. That was wonderful. So let's go to Steve and Skip. So Steve, you're just kind of sticking with Peter at this point, right?
Oh yeah. So that second morning, I got up, did a little run walk, did a little running, and then I started walking again. And then I heard this shuffle behind me. I'm like, I know who that is. And I turn around and there's Peter. I'm like, yes, I don't have to do this alone. And so me and Peter hooked up and just kept pushing along. We both had a really good pace and just enjoying each other's company and enjoying a morning without rain.
That was the best part. So, Skip, what was kind of your strategy in crewing Steve at this point? Were you just like skipping a couple miles ahead or what?
Understand this is all foreign to me. Steve's been doing this for a little while, but this is the first time I've ever, tried to help out. And so, I was probably a little hypervigilant about trying to be available for him. But mostly what I would end up doing is just leapfrogging him every 2.5 or 3 hours on the first couple of days, I would I would figure out where he was at and pull up alongside him and, figure out what he needed, if he needed to dump some gear, just add water or whatever. And then he would take off and I'd be on my own for a couple hours. So,
Yeah.
if I had to run to the store, I would do that. Or most of the time, honestly, I was sitting around reading a book and doing nothing.
That's awesome. So, Eric, was this your first time going over bridges like that?
I'd say yes. What was a lifesaver for me is when I did the first bridge, I started the bridge with Mike, and he told me about the numbers going from 88 to zero on the first bridge. So that
Right.
gives me a sense of distance, because that those bridges are so long. With the numbers, it's easy to break down the distance.
Yep.
And that's how I was able to keep my sanity, because otherwise I would have become completely insane at the end of the bridge.
Right. So what did you think of the whole P Island section?
It's just long and long and long.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I actually enjoy it, because the first bridge I did at daylight each time, but both ways. And it's a nice bridge with the climb. It's a bit windy, but it's a nice, you have nice views. You have with the on each side you have nice views. I was able to take a lot of nice pictures. And then the second bridge, I did it both time at night, and that bridge was even longer than the first one. So it was kind of fun to see the lights of the car coming from very, very far. And then you say, well, they're so small. Is it somebody coming back at me, or it's a car? And then it takes like forever to before you can be sure it's a car, because it takes forever for them to catch up to you.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So we all get to KOA. It was actually really, really nice. My wonderful wife actually left Epsom salt baths there, so I got there right after. It's probably about 6:45 in the evening, and so I jumped in an Epsom salt bath and felt fantastic. And that was the last time that my leg didn't hurt. And so it was a good night for me. Got a good night's rest, and then. Did we? I was trying to remember. What time did we get up the next morning, Mike, and leave?
It's 4 o'clock, right?
Was it four?
Yeah, I think pretty early. Yeah, because we have 48 miles to do it. So,
Right.
yeah, we did 4 o'clock. So we get
Okay,
up
I
at
couldn't
8.
remember what time. I know it was still dark when we left, and because we all gathered out outside the KOA. At the entrance, and Skip was a blessing. We got to take a little bit of weight off and have him carry some stuff for us. So that was fantastic.
No, it
But
was
so
more
did we
five.
set
It
off
was
at
more
four?
five. Yeah, it was more five, because I
Was
th
it
this is
five?
where I lo yeah, it was five, because this is where I lost you.
Okay. And
Is it
so
five?
did you leave slightly after we did, or did we just take off and
It
kind
just
of
took off. Yeah, I
okay.
just broke down after the KOA. I broke down for that part, the in and out, the from KOA to Lighthouse and back. That section was very slow for me, but
Right.
it's. Yeah, we all left out at the same
You were
time.
having shoe problems though, right?
No, not that much.
Okay.
I
Okay.
was just very slow. I just basically I what I think is I just slept too much at the KOA, basically. So it
Okay.
was too much for me. So and I was
Got it.
just super slow.
Got it.
And I saw you at the lighthouse just after when you turned around at the lighthouse.
So we start out, and it was actually. This was, I think, our best weather day, don't you guys think? Steve, was this the best weather day we had?
Yeah, it was what the 50-degree day. It was still a little cool because the breezes like that, but beautiful skies. Wasn't too super cold. Weren't overheating, even if you could run. But yeah, no, it was probably one of the best days that we had.
Yeah, Mike Edwards crushed this part. So I think I was out in front. I was just doing my typical, fast walk, and I was out in front, and all of a sudden Mike went trotting by me. He and Dave Moore and Darren were doing the pole, like they were counting poles and everything. So they passed me. And so that was pretty exciting. Peter, when did you and Danny, and both you and Danny can chime in here, what like you left at 5, and like how was your progress? That whole section, our favorite section, Salvo to Avon.
Well, I know I never really liked that section from previous years. So this time I see in the daytime. So I told Danny and Steve, like, the last time was like 300 something polls. I was joking around, right? Trying
Right.
to keep. But you said this is gonna be tough day. It's gonna be a really tough day. So trying to keep our energy, like save it every ounce of it, it's going to be
Yeah.
long. And you took off. Mike Edward took off. I wasn't panicking. I said we're going to catch up, but all we have to do is like trying to maintain 3.5, and I would be very happy. That means like close to 17 minute pace, right? So trying to maintain it. Well, sometime we got a little bit faster, and then so I said to them, like, we're gonna catch up in, Avon, and then Mike called me too. Mike said, "Hey, I'm in the coffee shop, Avon."
And not the coffee shop, not the
Yeah,
coffee.
it's
See,
small.
Mike didn't share with you guys that we got to muffins and scones, and I had been fantasizing about a muffins and scone sandwich and a hot coffee for miles. Miles. I mean, miles. I was fantasizing about what I was going to eat. I was going through the menu in my head, and then we get there and they're undergoing renovations and closed. And so Mike Edwards is awesome. He picked me back up off of the road where I was throwing my little hissy fit, and this dear little old lady steered us to a coffee shop not too much further, and I got something. I don't remember what I ate, but I ate something and had a hot coffee and got that stupid calf sleeve that I had mistakenly put on my leg, which I will never do ever again. And but my leg was already shot to snot, so yeah, the pain set in from there. And Danny, because I don't know where Mike Edwards went to, so we'll get back to him later. So Danny, you get into Avon, and what was your kind of mindset at this point?
So for day three, my whole goal was to not be in front of Peter. My whole goal was to stay with Big Papa Seal because I felt bad because Mike Edwards had a talk with me on that bridge of more like a come to Jesus moment on day two. I was like, hey, you left Peter behind. And I was like, I didn't leave Peter behind. But at this point, I was like, you know what? I need to learn how to walk like Peter and be like Peter. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to stick with Peter. And so I was walking it out, stepping it out, and I stayed with them for the majority of the time. And then, so it put different stress and strain on my legs, on my shins, and my right foot, because my right foot was already tight from the first day on the beach. But the good thing, it was a beautiful day. And the winds were coming out of the, it was pretty much like a tailwind, almost a crosswind. It wasn't too bad. The sun was up, and then there was a lot of different things to see. So we also got to see some people coming back as we were moving towards the lighthouse that were moving along the way. I think it was we had come across, I think Rick Gray, he had a van and he had his wife and a friend that they were running, and I was like, that was pretty cool. And so it was just a good, it was a good stretch during the day. It was a good stretch.
During the day, we'll get to the night soon. So, Steve, were you, Peter, and Danny were all pretty much staying together, right?
Yeah, I mean, between the three of us, we were actually keeping up a pretty good pace. You guys would get out ahead of us and we'd catch up. We would just kind of make sure that we didn't stick around for too long, and we'd kind of step out when you guys did, and we all kind of just stayed within a mile or so, if less, most of the time, going through and coming back that night.
Now, Joel, you had a little bit different adventure leaving the KOA. So tell us about your adventure.
So Kosti and I left the KOA at about 8:30 p.m. on Monday night, and I made a near fatal mistake thinking I can leave some gear because we're coming right back to the KOA, and the one piece of gear that I needed I left behind, and that was my puffer jacket that would have kept my core warm. And so we stepped off at about, and I had a pretty good windbreaker. It's waterproof, it's a windbreaker, but that wind was just brutal. It was cold, and 3 hours into it, and I was almost like you, starting to go hypothermic. I couldn't keep myself warm. We knew there was the post office coming up, but it was still miles away. At some point along the down to the Avon post office, Georges was on her way back, so her son Noah was at one of these parking spots, and I'm like, "Oh my God, Kosti, I'm jumping in this car. I need some heat." So he's like, "Okay, I'm good. I'm gonna keep going, and I'll stop and talk to Lisa for a little bit." So Noah was standing outside the car, and I'm like, "No, I need some heat, man. Can I jump in the car?" And he's like, "Yeah, jump in." So I jumped in Noah's car for like 5 minutes and heated myself up, caught back up to Kosti, talked to Lisa Georges for a little bit, and then we started moving on towards the post office there. I think it's in Avon, right? And at my shin issue started at Pea Island. That's when I started noticing that was hurting. So I was already hurting from my shin there. But by the time we got to the post office in Avon, I was almost done, and I couldn't stop shivering. I did have my emergency blanket with me that Scott Raddick gave me, and that pretty much saved my life and my Swami finish, because without that, I would have thrown in the towel. And I actually did tell Kosti as I was crawling up underneath my emergency blanket at about 01 on Tuesday morning. I was it Tuesday morning?
Yeah, Tuesday morning. Yep.
Yeah. And so around 01 Tuesday morning, I crawled up under that emergency blanket, and I went to sleep, and I slept for 5 hours, you know. And
Yeah.
I woke up, and Kosti's like, "Here, have a mint Mentos." And I'm like, "Okay." So I took the mint Mentos. I noticed his little Butterfinger laying on the floor, and I'm like, "Man, I wish I had a Butterfingers right now." So I ate that mint Mentos, and I'm like, "All right, Kosti, I think I'm good to go." I felt refreshed and started stepping off, and Kosti, you know, said, "Man, you know, I'm so impressed at how fast you went from I'm done to let's go." So
That's awesome.
we stepped off at about 5:30 or so, and we hit the BP just as it was opening up. Matter of fact, we had to
Awesome.
wait outside for like 5 minutes until they unlocked it. And the first thing I bought in there was a damn Butterfingers bar, because I noticed it on that Kosti had one laying on the floor in the post office, and I wanted it
That's
so
awesome.
bad. So yeah, we stocked up on hot food and hot coffee and you know, just snacks and everything. And then we stepped off towards the turnaround point, feeling pretty damn good. And when that sun came up, yeah, that Tuesday I think ended up being a beautiful day, and that's what really kept me going there. But
That's awesome.
I will never make that mistake again and leave that puffer jacket, because
Yep.
that
Even if
is,
you're gonna sweat, bring the puffer jacket. Yeah.
bring the puffer jacket. Even though I'm
Yep.
coming back to the KOA, I certainly needed it.
There you
So,
go. There you
yep.
go. So what time did you and Coasty get to the lighthouse?
I think we were there around noon or before noon. I think
Okay.
we met Kim Drake shortly after that. She was hanging out. She sh showed up shortly after us. And she hung out there for quite some time, I guess, after us. And then
Yeah, and we
we,
ran into you guys just outside of
yeah,
Buxton. Yeah.
because we didn't spend a whole lot of time there at all. We wanted to get there, get our picture taken there, and then step off again. You know, we
Yeah,
didn't.
that was our goal. It
Yep.
was to get the
Yep.
picture taken. And
Yep.
then Mike Edwards made this fantastic suggestion. I don't remember when you made it, Mike, but about ordering a sub to go from Angelo's. When did you say that? 'Cause that was brilliant to me.
Years I've stopped in and ordered, and I've had to wait my turn to like have it done. You and I still ended up waiting for like 10 minutes for the young
Right.
cashier to get her stuff. But it's like, okay, I gotta plan a little bit smarter and order food beforehand as soon as we leave the lighthouse. So
Yeah, and that was a great idea. That was a nice hot sandwich. And we all made, because Mike and I got there about the same time as right after Dave and Darren, right?
Yes.
And then Peter, Danny, Steve came in shortly after. And then we met Eric on our way out of Buxton. And
He was
so,
just making the turn. Yep.
yep. And so for a lot of us, this was when I think it got kind of hard. What you guys tell me if it's any different. We'll start with Mike. When the sun set on Tuesday and we're still in that area between Avon and Savo, was that when is it just me, or did it seem like things just got really hard at that point?
The wheels on the bus fell off for me. So
Yeah.
I knew I had to stay close to Peter. I was not getting a good quality sleep, but it's like just do the best I can and make it to the marina. I knew all that stuff through the KOA section. All that stuff is kind of like closed down, so just focus. I know we're going to stop at the KOA, but another evening of no sleep. But it's like my goal, once for me, once you get, regardless of the day, once you get to the marina and coming back, you got, life opens up again. So,
So let's go to Eric. Eric, what time did you get to the lighthouse and make that turnaround?
it was about 1:45, 2 p.m.,
Okay. And you're
something like that.
solo at this point, right?
Yeah, I've been solo since a few miles after the KOA because everyone took off, and I've been solo all the long stretch, that 10 miles, something like that, where it's endless right line,
Yeah.
just so long. And that was pretty hard on my mind until I get to Avon and the Food Lion.
Okay.
So once I got to the Food Lion, I got there around just a bit before noon, and I got in there. I had time to chill a bit in the restroom, get some food. They had full stock on the chicken tender, the cheese sticks, and then I needed some comfort food. So even if I told my wife I will stop drinking beer at races, I went to the beer section, and then I got myself a nice Modelo lime and salt, and that made my day. Basically, it just cheered me up to the lighthouse. That section from the Food Lion to the lighthouse, I made it very fast. And then at the end of the lighthouse, I crash a bit, and then I move it a bit slower to the back to the Food Lion. Took another beer there.
There you go.
And then I was and then I get to nighttime. When I get out of Avon, it was starting to get dark, and I get that I did that all section dark side.
Yeah.
And the only amazing thing is I had there was a cop at the end of the section that was I'm pretty sure I saw him give at least 5 tickets before I got up to him. So seeing
Awesome.
the lights going up 5 times before I get to the cops, said, okay, it's still that far.
That's all. What a way to gauge your distance, right?
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
awesome. So what time did you end up getting to the KOA?
I got there at around just after midnight, around midnight 30.
Okay.
But
And did you
I had
turn it
told my
around? You turned it around pretty fast, didn't you leave before the rest of us?
Yes, but what I did is I told Mike to because I was sleeping in the same room as Mike, so I told him just I'm gonna get there after you. So put my stuff outside the room that I left in the room, and I'll and that's when I was I was when I was repacking my gear beside the room. I heard that Joel and Krusty going out, so when I knock on their door, I just was able to use their room a bit, a few hours, and then I went out at 4 a.m. basically, but just a bit before 4 a.m.
Awesome. Awesome. So, yeah, Mike, Dave, Moore, and I almost died on that section. Mike, do you remember that stupid truck that I wish I would have had a gun at that point?
Yes. I know you had just got your vest going, and I'm like 4 steps behind you, and it's like, I wonder if he's just staring at the lit vest and trying to figure out what it is since we're in the middle of nowhere. So,
Yeah, I have no
yeah.
idea. Scared the
I
bejesus
know,
out of me, man.
everyone. That's why I moved to the other side of the road for the longest time. So,
Yeah, and it's funny, Mike, because you don't use a headlamp at night, do you?
I have one, but I prefer to stay in the dark because, all those streets are pretty well clean. You're not walking
Right.
into potholes.
Yep.
Some of the towns you do, but I can just, from my experience on these multi-day, when you got this little red light or little white light, and the cars are coming up behind you or in front of you, they're trying to figure out what the hell is this light for? So
Right. Yeah, and
it's
I'm
easier
all
for me
lit
to
up
stay in
like
the
a
dark.
Christmas tree. I have the complete opposite. I'm like, light me up, baby. So,
Yep, I don't blame you. Everyone has a comfort level.
yep. So, Peter, what you guys are making your way, because we were all together at the turnaround. I think were we all together when we got back to the Food Lion and you had your second phase of grocery store sushi?
Yeah, I have two packages on the way up to the lighthouse. I tried out the vegetable sushi, right? That was delicious. I give some to Danny. And then I said, if I don't get sick by a couple hours, I'm gonna get more. I didn't get sick. Went down, turned around. I went ahead from Danny and Steve. I said, I'm gonna go get the food. And then you guys need anything, I'll buy it and then meet you outside so we save some time. So I went to get another package. Sushi, like I felt really good, like you know, and then we ate, and then you guys took off. Like we saw it together in that point. You guys came
Right.
in, and I was able to eat on the third day, so I'm very happy. My stomach has an issue in the past, but that day was like the most amount of food I ever ate in the race, so it was
Hey,
good.
you're
Like I
tripping
was.
me out because I've run parts of Swami in 2024 with you and Haynesport last year, and you are eating all this food. And I'm like, okay, where is Peter putting all this food? Because you never eat.
I never eat. There's a point where usually I probably only eat like 50 miles in 100 mile races, right? The rest of the time I don't eat anything, not even water. I don't even drink. So this time I felt like, oh, I got a lot of energy in me. So that was good. I mean, on the way back, that stretch is pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
We all getting tired. I mean, I done a lot of races in the past. Nighttime is not my strongest
Yeah.
either. So yeah, I've tried. Well, you should let Steve and Danny talk
Yeah.
about that, you know?
I'm gonna. Yeah. So, Steve, jump in here and kind of tell us about, because it got dark pretty fast after we left Avon. What was that like for you? Because you now are at your PR distance, correct?
Yeah, so last year I made it to the lighthouse. And for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, this was a good trip, and I called it. So this year, I was going to take it slow and just enjoy the experience. And about 6 miles before we hit the turnaround at the lighthouse, that's when the pain started. And I'm like, this is not good. I was like, there's no way I get in this far this year and then have this problem. And both my ankles were in pain, but my right one was really bad. And I'm just like, this is not going to happen. And so we made the turnaround and come back, and it was getting a little sore. And then I think that's when we all stopped and got the
Asper
I
cream.
couldn't remember, on the way back we got the Astra cream, didn't we,
I
for
got the
our
Asper cream
shin?
on the way out and shared it with you guys
Yeah.
at the lighthouse. And then I think you
Yeah.
guys picked up a tube on your way back.
Yeah, so got the Astra cream. Peter got us all food. We ate and on the way back. But yeah, that stretch on the way back until we got to the KOA was probably one of the toughest, darkest adventures I've had in a really long time. We were all looking for the golden sign of the Dollar General. And
Yep.
I was like, this thing is never gonna show. This it's an oasis. Peter, you're lying to me. Because you said once we get there, they're gonna have another mile to the KOA. And then Peter finally was like, hey, look, it's a Dollar General. I'm like, no, it's not, it's a Waffle House. Because I don't believe you. We make
That's awesome.
it to the Dollar General. I'm like, okay, I just gotta get it to the KOA. And then as you're walking down the road's just crooked enough you can't really see anything. And then you think it's the KOA, but you don't want to lie to yourself because you're in such pain that
Yeah.
you don't want to have false hope. And luckily it was the KOA, but that was a long, hard stretch. And Peter was amazing. He had two
Yeah.
people to shepherd. He had Danny in front, who was suffering, me in the back, and he was in the middle trying to make sure that we both got to the KOA that night. And I know I was holding him up quite a bit, but he wouldn't leave my side to make sure I made it through.
And both you and Danny hit a really dark spot, and not just because it's dark out, but really, Peter said something to you, and I know, and I'm going to ask Danny in a second, but Peter said something to you. What was it that he said to you that kept you going?
Well, first thing he says, call somebody.
Yeah,
Call
exactly.
somebody, call somebody. So I did. I called my wife, my two older daughters. I left a message for my son. I knew he'd be at work. And then I called one of my other racing buddies, and which helped a lot. Because like I said, that was probably some of the most pain I've ever been in for such a long period of time too, right? I mean, it was probably a good 7 or 8 hours on the way back, trying to get that stretch. So it definitely took my mind off of it. Just like when me and you would hook up, or me and Peter would hook up, when we'd sit there and talk for miles, you forget about your pains, you're right.
You're just concentrating on talking. And I will say, guys, that this is the first time I've ever done this not solo. So I've never done Swami with a group before, and I'm telling you guys saved my bacon, because somebody always was there to come up and just start talking and just engage you in a conversation. And it was like a miracle, man, because all of a sudden it was like all the pain, all the frustration, all the, damn it, why aren't I moving faster? It would just all melt away, because now you're just having this awesome conversation. And so I got to tell you guys, this was an amazing journey for me. So totally incredible. But let's go to Baby Seal. Danny, you hit the turnaround. You were doing pretty good. And then on the way back, the wheels fell off, didn't they?
Oh man, let me tell you, the wheels totally fell off. Totally fell off. I will tell you, sometimes you do crazy stuff. Well, I guess if you see the folks that do the math and they do the graphs, if you fuck around, you will find out. This was definitely one of those moments. But when you sign up for this type of race, I would just say flat out, I knew at some point in time I would enter this so-called abyss of darkness, and this abyss was, let's just say, it was a dark place where I kept on spiraling further, deeper into a mental loop that was very, very difficult to get out of. But before I go down that path, I do want to say is like sometimes you pick and choose people that from a selective mindset that you know that you trust them so much enough that you can allow yourself to go to those deepest recesses of yourself and find that peace or find that nugget or find that sliver of truth that means so much more to the world for you. But also know that, like, I have a deep sense of admiration and respect for Big Papa Seal. I mean, not only did he say exactly what you needed to say, but he said it in his, I would say normal, happy, jovial self, but blunt, characteristic of a Navy SEAL, of somebody who'd be ruthless in the face of adversity and just tell you what you need to hear, and the deepest sense of love and respect. Like, he said exactly what you needed to hear. I mean, when somebody tells you, "Hey, call somebody," or he says, "Okay, hey, got it, your phone's dead. Hey, think about a happy place." And at that point, it's like, "Oh, hey, I'm fumbling, looking for what I'm happy." And I hit a point where I think about something that to me brought a lot of happiness, but also brought me a lot of pain. And that pain spiraled even further into darkness. But before any of those things were said, Peter said something so powerful was that, "Danny, you're moving. Your feet are moving. You're right behind me. But your mind's fucked up." And say, "We need to fix your mind."
Wow.
And like, he knew that I was moving. I mean, Steve, and so this is the preface of, like, some of the training that I've done. I'm not saying I'm a badass. I mean, I've done Marine Corps training. I'm a martial arts instructor. I've talked about things when people go internal. I mean, everything collided at that point. Steve hit his ultimate miles at that point, and so did I. I mean, every single step, every single mile was a victory. But at that point, I was in trace of both of them, right behind them, shuffling and moving. But at that point, Peter would systematically go through checks and balances and say, "Hey, how's everybody doing?" The sun was setting, temperature was dropping, and I stopped doing what I normally do. Normally, I change stuff, set stuff up, set my light, take a picture before sunset. I had gone internal. I stopped responding. I didn't say, "Hey, I'm good." I didn't say, "I'm up." It was just silence. and I was just in this rote. I was moving, but my mind was fucking me. And so eventually it got to some point, Peter did the systems checks with all of us, and I ended up saying something, I'm not good. And then I moved up right behind Peter, and he said a couple other things, which is all the stuff that he said before. And you know what Marines do, or people who are stubborn, not saying that I knew what was best, but I ended up saying, it's like, I didn't tell Peter the full answers for some of them, but it got to the point where it's like, Peter said what he needed to say. And at that point, it's like, Peter, I'm going to figure it out. And then shortly thereafter, I was like, you know what, Danny, you're wrong. You need to tell Peter you're going to make a phone call. And I said, Peter, I'm going to make a phone call. I'm going to call somebody from my work phone. And I pulled up the first email that I knew that would probably have his cell phone. And I called the operations officer. This guy, his name is Gabe. His last name is Benjamin. He's a major like me. And we talk regularly on the mornings to drive. He lives in Swansboro, which is like 45 minutes from Cherry Point. We usually talk in the morning or talk in the evening because sometimes he has a long drive, or, hey, for example, sometimes you're falling asleep when you're driving home after a long day worth of work. And I knew he would answer because he normally calls and I normally call, and we usually pick up the phone. And I called him, and it was like perfect, perfect rhythm. He knew, it was like, hey, Danny, what's up? And I basically flat out just told him, hey, look, I'm in a really fucking dark place. I need some help. And then at that point, I started stepping it out. I started stepping it out to the point where I was moving. Obviously, there was some hard things said. I told him, it was like, hey, I'm gonna lose my shit during this conversation. And you can tell everybody at work tomorrow and say that you fucking made the XO cry. And he was like, hey, we're just fucking around here. I was like, we're gonna get you to where you need to go. And we reverse mapped everything that I was seeing. And he was using a map to basically guide me back on target. And I was obviously doing checking back on Peter. And I slowed down enough, and Peter told me, say, hey, Steve's hitting a wall too. And I was like, okay, got it. And at that point, I had my buddy on the line, and we stayed on the phone for 1 hour and 13 minutes. So that was around equivalent
Wow.
to probably 3 miles,
That's
three-ish miles
awesome.
at a 20-minute plus pace. And I told him, like, hey, man, I appreciate you taking your time. I know you got to go work tomorrow. And he's like, nah, man, I'm going to go clean some stuff up. I'll give you a call back in 30 minutes. And he called me like
Wow.
30 minutes before the KOA, which was a huge win. But this is something else I told Peter afterwards. I told him, like, hey, man, I'm really sorry I put you in that position. And that was something that I had to think about is, I became a liability for somebody else, where I put somebody else's life in danger. Not only did I put my life in danger, but I put somebody else's life in danger. And like, hey, is this a valid reason to DNF? And thinking about it. But realistically, the hard part was what do you do when everything you think you're supposed to do isn't the right answer? And then how fast can you make adjustments? Whether you have somebody to give you the feedback like Peter did, how fast can you give yourself the feedback that you need to make a quick adjustment before you completely spiral out of control? I can't say what I would have done without Peter, but I can say what happened and what transpired that night was transformational, and it was extremely worth the race in and of itself.
Yeah,
So
that is awesome.
that's a
That is
lot.
awesome. Cool. Well, we're going to kind of skip over a little bit of stuff here, but so Peter, we all kind of got together, and I'm not even sure how we got together, and we decided, okay, we're going to do 2 short days, and then we're going to do a midnight assault on the beach. Do you remember how that all transpired? Was that and Mike, please feel free to chime in because I don't remember how we decided that's what we were going to do. So Peter, you go first.
Yeah, we came back that KOA about 10, 15, somewhere around there. I can see you guys, everybody hurt. Like that day was like eye opener. I was thinking like leaving around 2 o'clock in the morning, hit the maybe Hilton Garden. That was my mind, like, if you got everybody in shape. But on the way back, I mean, everybody hitting the wall. Like nobody looks good. And I said, that's it, like done. We are done. This is like we're gonna survive. So like we talk about it, like let's see we can make it to the what is there? The first
The
place, what
Holiday Inn
is it?
Express, yeah.
No, Comfort
Oh no,
Inn.
we were gonna make it to the Comfort Inn.
Yeah. So let's see. Everybody feel good, we're gonna hit to the Holiday Express.
Yep.
So that's two options. We don't have any other option.
Yeah, the
I
Hilton
don't
Garden
think
Inn was
any
out.
way out. Like that's about like 38 miles. Like nobody, like you guys are hurting so bad. So I told Danny and Steve, you gotta start taking the pill every 4 hour when we do it, and make sure pain med will be ready. You're not gonna make it. And then I talked to Mike Edward about it. Mike said, totally, like, let's see what happened, right? That's why we like, let's sleep, let's start late because there's no point of pushing it now. So
So,
we
Mike,
left at seven.
was it your idea to start at 8, Mike?
Well, what we were trying to do, if from back going back to the, let's say the Comfort Inn or 7-Eleven, it's destitute. We had to hit that Liberty gas station when it was
Yep.
opening up. So, for those guys who want to go even early, it's like more power to you. But I, you know, we missed the Liberty coming in. You know, they closed what, an hour
Well,
and
they
40 minutes
ended up
early?
closing. I hit it at 6:20 and they were locking up. 6:20
We went
p.m.
by, Danny and I went by at 7:05, even though the posted hours are at 8. I knew we were going to be closed, that they were going to be pushing that closed, but it's like on the, they're pretty good about opening on time. Maybe not getting the grill going at 6, but if we can delay a little bit of the grill, then we could get some good, warm food in us, and that's kind of what happened. So.
Yep. That was good planning. So Joel, what time did you and Coasty leave?
So, well, we stepped off from the KOA at about 1 in the morning, 12:30, 1 in the morning. We saw Eric, and we were just pushing hard. And Coasty got me to Nag's Head, basically. And I'm going to tell you, if it wasn't for Coasty, I would have bowed out. Coasty kept me going, and he was hurting too. But we were both hurting, but together. We like became brothers. We learned everything about each other, about each other's lives. He knows my whole entire military career. I know his entire career. I know everything about his kids. He knows everything about my family. So that's how we got ourselves through this. We just talk and talk and talk and talk. And I finally started slowing down Coasty into Nag's Head. He was still able to run a little bit. And I told him, "Hey, I'm going to get to the Hilton," and he's like, "Okay, I'm just going to continue push. I'm going to push until and meet my family." And his family actually came out and met him down the road somewhere, and they
Oh,
had
wow.
so they met him on the road down there for a little bit. And so is it around Nag's Head? I guess about 6 or 7 miles from the Hilton. Where we separated, and I was okay with that. I'm like, Coasty, go ahead. I'm almost to the Hilton. I'm gonna rest there, and then I'll step off from there. And so he stepped off. Another, sheer luck. Here comes Caitlin Reiser, right behind me. And she picked me up and stayed with me the whole time to the Hilton. She had a Airbnb like a mile away from the Hilton, so we just stayed together that last 6 or 7 miles there, and
That's awesome.
that also picked me up and helped me because at that point I was stopping at every bench I saw, for 5 or 10 minutes, stretching, contemplating my life choices, and then I'd get up and slowly move again. But once I linked up with Caitlin, I was like stepping pretty good
Awesome.
until I got to the Hilton. And then once I got to the Hilton, I was like, okay, I'm gonna rest till midnight, and then I'm gonna make a final push and finish this thing up on Thursday. What I failed to do at the Hilton, I decided I was going to maximize my rest, and then I realized, you know what? I didn't even supply myself. And
Oh no.
if I'm leaving at 11:30 or midnight, there's going to be nothing open for me to resupply myself before I hit the beach. And that's when I started moving at 30-minute miles, and then that's when you received that phone call. I was trying to pass time. I was looking for anything to do, so I was scrolling Facebook, and I noticed you made a post 21 minutes ago, and I'm like, you know what? He's still up. I'm going to call Mike. So that's why I called you. I'm like, hey, Mike, I'm here. I'm not sure what I should be doing right now. And I'm like, I'm almost at the Hampton Inn. I think I'm gonna duck in there. And you're like, yes, duck in there. Stay there. We're gonna be there later today, and we're all gonna step as a big group at midnight, and we're gonna make a final push and finish this thing up on Friday. And so, just calling somebody like you were talking about earlier with Danny there. I decided, hey, I'm gonna call Michael Horner and see what's the best options for me. And you gave me the best advice I could take, and I showed up at the Hampton Inn at 5:30 in the morning, and I was there until we stepped off on at midnight. So I had maximized my rest to make that final push. So that's
Glad
how
you
it
did.
yeah, I am too. So that's how I ended up with the group.
Yep. So we had one more day in the rain. Thank you. It wasn't bad rain, though. I mean, Steve, did you think it was bad? It was just sort of like annoying rain, right?
Yeah, that's what I call the drizzle drizzle. And I think we only had like one or two times for short brief that it like actually picked up to what I would call real rain. But it wasn't too cold, a little drizzly, drizzly and dreary, but it was a wasn't a bad day compared to the days we've had in the past. So yeah,
Yeah.
it was a nice day.
Yeah, that was awesome. So Lois and Jim, you met us at the Hampton, or was it the Holiday Inn? Which one did you meet, or did you meet us at both?
Holiday Express, right?
We
Okay.
met you at the Holiday Inn Express. It was Wednesday night, and it was funny. Peter had called me and said you were going to be there. And
We
so
need
Jim and I,
medical staff.
yeah, he said, we need medical help. So he didn't say you needed psychological help, just medical. So we were good. We packed up the first aid kit. We headed down the road. We ran, actually ran into Eric on the way. He was probably at about milepost 4 on the beach road. It was raining, so we just pulled over, put the window down, and talked to him for a couple minutes. Told him we were on the way down to you guys, and that's when we all started with the rubbing the shin splits, the ankles. I think Mike, you
Compression
actually
straps.
once it was done, Mike, you
You
went to
went to
bed,
bed.
but Danny, Peter, me, and Jim, we just sat around and had a party. We had pineapple upside down cake. We just talked about things. So yeah, it was everybody was hurting for sure.
Yeah, Peter got a good picture of me crashed. So thanks, Peter. Evidently, I just decided I'd had enough and I was going to sleep. So.
Well, it's funny
Well,
you say that because the first night at the Hilton Garden Inn, you went up too because you had no
no
clothes to
clothes.
change into while we were all
Right.
down in the lobby partying. And so
Yep.
you always just crash out, Mike. It's either you go
Yeah,
to bed or you go to the
I
room.
miss the parties, man. Something's wrong with me. Something different. Like,
I tried to get back fast enough with a pair of OR scrub bottoms and a t-shirt, but you were in bed. And just
yes,
like the
I
night
was. And
after
I
I
wasn't
rubbed your
leaving because it was warm in that bed.
like,
So.
yeah. And the back at the Holiday Inn Express, after I got done rubbing your leg, putting the compression socks on, I guess you were comfortable. You went to bed. I
That's
mean,
right.
you had your cake and good night.
I actually don't remember eating the cake. I had to ask Peter the next day, did I actually eat the cake or did one of you just take it from me? And he told me that I ate it. So that's good. Thank you. That was wonderful cake too. I'm sure I have
We
no recollection of it.
didn't have to feed it to you. You did
You
it
did
yourself.
yourself.
There you go. Good. That's awesome. All right. So Eric McGee, you didn't stop at the Holiday Inn Express, did you?
No, I went all to the Hilton. But from the actually, when I start from the KOA, I met up with I think it was Caitlin that I met up with on the first bridge, and then I pushed with her until the visitor center at P. Allen. And after that, she was a bit faster than me, so I had to crash a bit. I slowed down a bit until the KFC, where I needed some rest. And then from KFC to Hilton, it took forever because that point my feet was hurting. I tried multiple things, even putting two insoles in my shoes. It was crazy, basically. It took for me forever to get to the Hilton. And then I stayed a few that the definitely meeting Lois and James, it cheered me up a bit. Give me some push to the Hilton. I got into the in the Hilton around, I think it was 10:30 p.m. So I went to sleep, and I wanted to go out again at midnight, so close to midnight, but basically my body didn't told me that it was not good enough, so I basically only wake up at 2 a.m. instead of midnight. and then went out around 3 a.m. So which
Okay.
was a bit.
And were you thinking of pushing through to the finish line at that point?
I was trying to, because 3 a.m. to the finish line, it was close, but it was visible. But when I went out the Hilton actually in the morning, I was feeling pretty good. I ran up to the dock city, and unfortunately, the thing I did wrong is I start running from the Hilton to dock, so it's about 5 miles, something like that. And I ran that whole section, mostly ran that whole section, but I was dressed to walk and not run. So when I got into dock, I was sweating a lot. And then the rain started pouring down. It was colder, and I was just shivering after the dock, and from the dock to the Hampton Inn, I was just shivering all the way. And sleep deprivation come in, so I had to stop two times to sleep before the Hampton. So I say, okay, I'm not gonna push to the end. I'm gonna go sleep at the Hampton and wait for the rest of the gang, because from Lois and James, I know that you were just a few miles behind me. So I say, oh yeah, they'll catch up with me at the Hampton. And I wrote to Mike Edwards and say, well, where are you guys? And then he told me that you were going to stop at the Hampton. So okay, we're going to regroup and start to all together at night and finish it on Friday.
Awesome.
So that's
And
fine
you
enough.
got there around the same time as Joel did, didn't you? Sometime in the morning?
I got there at 7:15 in the morning,
Okay.
so it gave me a full 17 hours of rest before
Wow.
going out. So it was pretty nice.
Yeah, and we got there at 5, and so we got a good rest too. And well, I wouldn't call it rest. We got off our feet for a good few hours and then made the assault. So Mike, we all gather in the lobby of the Hampton Inn. And so what were you thinking at the time? Because if you looked at the weather, remember it was saying that there was going to be winds coming from the north and on and off rains. So what were you thinking the beach was going to be like?
Every year we get that headwind on the beach, so it's going to be a struggle. And I know I got an opportunity to spend quality time with Danny the day before. I know he pretty much dragged me to the Hampton Inn. I know he allowed me to stop at there's a restaurant right part of the BP, so Craving. So we split some wings there. So it's like, okay, if he needs to go, at least I know how to get to the Hampton Inn. But I knew there was going to be a long stretch the next day to get to at least off the beach. So.
Yeah, but good strategy. So Peter, once again, Papa Seal comes into play. Great planning on your part about the midnight leave, and also great suggestion to stop at the lighthouse restroom before we got onto the beach. So Peter, talk a little bit about the strategy and what was going through your head.
Well, I know you guys getting really like getting hurt and but in control, and we don't have much mile left, but everybody tired, We have good meal. I mean, Skip was a, I mean,
He was awesome.
always willing to help, like, out of his way to help us, like all day long, right? Whatever we need. I mean, truly appreciate it, the whole thing. Like, we all really need a good meal. So I don't want to eat the frozen stuff. Remember, like, I don't want to be a, like a pusher, like, hey, but Skip willing to, pick up the food. So we got a good meal. We all take a rest. And then we said, you know what? That place, I really like the bathroom. I slept in a couple bathroom in the past. So that is a top-notch bathroom,
That
So
is.
we should regroup that. They have water fountain there, so we can put the water. I know Skip it right around the corner, and so, and then, yeah. I mean, I was very excited. Believe it or not, didn't want to go on 12 at midnight, but we have plenty of time. If we go midnight, we know we're gonna finish it no matter what. If we leave until like I hear you guys are talking like 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, that is zero, like, I mean, we make any mistake, we are done. I didn't want that. Like, I was talking to Mike Edward about it. Like, our plan is great. We have zero, we cannot make any more mistake now. So I would say like midnight, like give us like 4 hours or, room to play with just in case something happened, I was telling, I think Danny and Steve about like something happened, pull my back. I will pull you all the way back to the freaking finish, no matter what.
Yep.
And, but it may take times on the sand, like, we're not moving 3 miles per hour, like maybe moving 1.5. Still, we can make it. That was
Yeah.
my thinking.
Yeah, the midnight leave, the leaving at midnight, I think, left us plenty of comfort zone to be able to make that final finish and everything. So that was a great idea. And getting to see everybody. So what did everybody think about Tyler Drapeau driving 3 hours down to the end of the sand to be our aid station?
That
Steve?
was some crazy night ops. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Did it surprise you guys?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Made me so happy.
Yeah. What do you think, Mike?
Speaking with Jim and Lois, this is like the community itself. I didn't expect him to show up, but I knew something was going to happen. Something always magical for any kind of trail run comes in. When you're having a shitty ass day, someone comes up to you and like says something nice to you or pats you on the back. It's a bit, this, even though it's not really true trail running, this is very, very different than road running. Road running, well, fuck you, we're gonna leave you behind, don't worry about it. But
Yep.
we pretty much kind of like made sure everyone kind of stayed together. We knew we were gonna get on the beach together. What was it? About halfway to the beach, we all, the three of us, concluded saying, "Hey, let's. I know Eric is behind us, but let's just start slowing down a little bit and let's finish all together." Since we've already spent most of the evening together, so.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome. So, Skip, here you come into play here too, because where did you come up with the idea to cook us all bacon burrito or breakfast burritos in the morning? Oh my gosh, that was awesome.
Pretty much the main value that I can have in this whole thing is just to make sure that you have what you need when you need it, and hot meals. Steve had said before we started this thing last year that having hot food might make a difference or whatever, and so I was prepared to make a few breakfasts and a few dinners or whatever, and as he kept picking up strays throughout the race. Yeah, it's just a matter of cooking a few more eggs. I was going to be out there anyway. So, I mean, let's be honest. What you guys are doing is fucking dumb. For anyone who doesn't do that kind of thing on the regular, watching you guys go through that, it seems pretty extreme. And so, that's a small thing that I can do that's going to make it, that's going to make an outsized difference for you guys. It didn't seem like that hard a thing.
Very, very well appreciated. And yeah, thank you so much for your sacrifice and your willingness to serve us on this race. That was way beyond anything I would have thought of. So, Steve, we get to the end of the sand. We're setting off on the sand. What's in your head?
When we first got on the beach,
Yeah.
well, I think all of us were like praying for better conditions for sure. I mean, we're all kind of doing the math and like, the tide should be going out, but we still don't know, what are we gonna get this headwind that we were expecting to get? And we get out on the beach, it's still dark, and it's like, well, there's a better path than we did when we came down the beach. So I'm like, well, that's a plus. And then we didn't really have a headwind. It was kind of coming sideways a little bit. So I'm like, well, this is another plus. And we're not totally freezing. I'm like, this is definitely better.
Yeah.
And so the further we went along, the beach actually got a little wider and a little more compact. And the sun came up, which is actually a beautiful sunrise, watching that orange sun come up. And then, yeah, the beaches got wider and wider, and the sand got a little harder and a lot easier to navigate. And it was like, wow, this is going to happen for all of us. It was exciting
Yeah.
times for sure.
Definitely exciting. Danny, what was going through your head?
So the cool thing about, I would say, as the last stop was Tyler, in the car, and then he had all his stuff for resupply or additional stuff. I think I got like a PB&J or something, and then ate that sucker before we jumped off, and then we hit that sand, and I was like, oh wow, we all single filed, had our headlamps, and we all plugged and chugged right behind somebody for a minute because there was a wind. And then I think it was four of us. We broke off. We had stepped off, but the other folks were the other three were in trace, not too far behind. And we just hit a groove until sunrise. I think the good thing about at some point in time I was looking at, and this is something that Peter called out a little bit later on, was I started following up some footsteps, and I just kept on moving with those footsteps that I saw on the sand. And then as daylight progressed, he ended up saying something to me. He's like, "Hey, did you notice the sticks?" And I was like, "No, I didn't." And he was like, "Oh, you must be a horrible tracker." But I was like, "I don't know who these footprints are, because if it rained on Thursday, these footprints would have to be fresh." And so I think the one that had the sticks was Darren, and then the other
Kim.
ones was probably Kim. And I didn't talk to Kim, but somebody was maneuvering closer to the beach near the water's edge, and then somebody was maneuvering in the top part of the sand. And the person on the top part of the sand, I liked their steps because they were smooth and I was comfortable stepping in the sand. And I prefer that versus the mushiness on the water. And so I stuck with those, and then I turned on my music and I hit a groove and I liked it. And so I just kept doing that. And then the sun came up and it completely changed everything. You couldn't have asked for a better last day in comparison to the first day. So at least
Amen.
we were able to see what we were really walking through. It did get monotonous for a little bit, but I mean, I'd rather have that than going through the chaos in the first day. So.
Yeah. So Joel, what did you think? So here's one of the things I want to ask you. Do you remember when you went through the gate at the border going down to North Carolina? And then what was the difference, the biggest difference you saw in the gate coming back?
Well, the biggest difference is that I noticed it so far off, and I'm like, why isn't this thing closer? So and I was moving so slow at that point, and so but I think it is a turning point once you cross that gate and you're in Virginia, and it's like, okay, 10 miles to go. I have made it. I am going to finish this thing. And then so that was my thought about the the border thing there. But backing up, Tyler Drapo, great human being. He even offered his parents to for me, along the way, and they did help me out coming off the beach on that first day. So I appreciate that. And then he allowed me to borrow those walking sticks for the beach portion, and that really super helped me out. And then hitting the beach, I was I started falling well behind the four or five of you, and then it was just me and Eric back there. And I would turn around, and Eric would be a mile back behind me, and I'd be like, "Okay, is he hurting or whatever?" And then I'd turn around and keep walking, and all of a sudden he'd come flying by me with a conch under each arm and a KFC bag full of shells, and I'm like, "Okay, he's okay." And then so I had you guys up front, but Eric was lagging back. So that kind of made me feel good. I was kind of caught in the middle. I kind of acted. It almost seemed like Eric was policing me up. He would just hang back, try to find some shells, catch up, make sure that I was good to go. So that's kind of how I was tackling the beach
Yeah, it was
thing
kind
there.
of special to not be hanging out there on your own, wasn't it?
So I was glad that I stepped off with the group, even though I lagged behind a little bit, but I appreciate everybody waiting for me there at the end. It really wasn't going to get through and finish this thing without that the what you called the treehouse pack this year. So
The triage pack. Last year was the party
the
pack,
oh
and this year
the
was the triage pack.
oh the triage. Okay, I was thinking
Triage. Yeah. I
treehouse.
was
I'm
breaking
like,
out my
okay.
big words.
I don't hear so well out of one of my ears. So I was hearing treehouse, but triage now makes more sense. So,
Makes a lot more sense. So, Eric, let's go to Eric McGee, the world famous shell gatherer. What was the final count on the number of shells that you picked up on the beach?
Too many. It was a good thing that they left most of my clothes to with Skip to in the van, because it gave me some room to put shells in the backpack, because of course the KFC bag didn't load up to those many shells. I think it's about, let's say, 8, 9 beautiful ones and a few small ones. But yeah, at some point I had to beat myself not to pick them up anymore, because I had enough.
It was awesome. That was one of my favorite things. So, what were your impressions coming back? Because this had to be a much different finish than any of your other 200s.
Yeah, well, the beach is, it's always amazing. I love, it's pretty rare I have to run on the beach. And when we went out from the Hampton Inn, I had took a look at the tide, and when I seen that the tide was at like 2, I think 2, 3 a.m. So I'd say, well, we'll get to the beach just in right in time. So as we move to the beach, we'll get more and more beach. I'd say, well, that will be awesome, and we'll have fun, and not running in the soft sand, just running on the sand, flattened out by the waves, will be nice. And it was like a really nice section, and I knew that we had enough time to take it easy, so take time and have fun and enjoy the beach. So that was very, I love that part actually. The last few miles was pretty interesting, and the fact I had enough energy to play with the run and run back to you, and just after that play with the shells and take times and drop back and then run back again. It was fun.
Yeah, it was an absolute blast having you with us, Eric. It was truly special. So let's go to Mr. Mike Edwards. Out of five finishes, how does this finish rate on the scale of, wow, that was pretty cool?
This was the most challenging year for me myself. So this is I'm hoping I go on another beach vacation with the group next year if I decide to do it. But this year it was not a beach vacation.
Nah. It was a beach
I suffered.
torture.
It was a sufferfest. So
Yeah. But pretty special
catching.
finish, didn't you think?
Yep.
Yeah.
So you get to a certain point. So I didn't really know Eric, but I know he was like collecting shells. I did not have Joel's number, but there's a couple of times I reached out to Eric, when we were ahead of him, and saying, "Hey, are you okay?" And I just wanted to hear his voice to see if he's like struggling or not. I figured if worst comes to worst, he could bring Joel along. So I felt safe with those guys, and you guys were like joking, but I was just like listening behind you guys, and you guys were like having a fun time.
We
I have no
did. We
idea
had a
what you guys were
blast.
joking about.
It
It
was all. It's
was
all Peter's fault. So we
a
get to the border,
The
Mike. We get.
penguins. I saw a lot of birds, a lot of strange birds.
I'll bet nobody knew that Virginia and North Carolina has penguins
And eagles too.
and
Eagles,
eagles. Yeah,
yes,
penguins
eagles.
and eagles. Oh my gosh, we laughed more the last 10 miles, and I think I have laughed in any race I've ever done before. It was so much fun. That was incredible. Thank you, Peter. You
Flying
gave us
penguins. Yeah, penguins. Flying penguins.
flying penguins. Danny, have you ever seen flying penguins before?
Not yet, but that day sure as hell I believed.
Yeah, we didn't even have to be hallucinating. We just had to hang out with Peter.
Not only were they flying penguins, but they're the gatekeepers between North Carolina
That's
and
right.
Virginia.
Yeah, they did not look like they were going to move and let us through, didn't they? It was awesome. That was so
And we
awesome.
had eagles too. He
Yeah,
said,
so yeah, tell us about the Eagles, Peter.
"Yeah, they changed their collars, right? They're hanging around the water." I said, "Oh, great! I mean, this is beautiful things. I seen like maybe climate change, right? They moved to North Carolina. I was thinking, right? So yeah, strange birds. So."
Very strange person. Who's ever seen so many eagles just standing in the water together like
Water.
that? I've never seen like flocks of eagles like that. You're a mess. You're an absolute mess. That was so much fun. So, Peter,
But you
you
let
had an
him run.
adventure once we crossed the border too. You had to go up high, right?
Yeah.
I gotta do like high elevation dumping. Drop the kids off. I went all the way to the sun dune, watch this, sun come up. Oh, that was the most beautiful view I ever seen, you know? And you guys, I don't try it at home, you know?
Oh, that was awesome. When you told us all about it, that was one of my favorite parts. I'm like, you've gotten close to people when you can tell all about how beautiful the sunrise is as you're doing your business. Yep, that was
Yep.
awesome.
I took a picture too, right? I was like, oh, wow, that's beautiful things.
All
Of the
right.
sunrise, I hope.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yes, the sunrise.
But Mike, you let me run the speed sign too. That
I
was
did.
funny.
Yes, I did.
That
Yes,
was like,
yeah.
oh man.
That was one of our favorite moments on Thursday. Is you guys remember seeing we were it was in Duck, wasn't it? Because it
Yeah,
was
I think
before.
so.
Yeah, or maybe it was after we crossed. I don't remember. It was either Duck or Corolla. But they have the little speed limit signs that you have to. The cars go by and it tells you what your speed is. And so I dared Peter to run and see if he could get it to register. And he got it the first time he did it. I didn't get a picture, but he got it to 6 miles an hour. And I told him he had to do it again so I could get a picture. And you got 7 miles per hour. I don't think it was actually seven, but we had fun. We had a lot of fun. So I
That
think some. So let's start summing this up. So we're going to do this, and I'm going to go to each one of you. As you guys know, the podcast name is Living an Ultra Life. So I'm going to ask you guys, when you hear that phrase, what's the first thing that hits your mind? And but you're going to start with, what was your most memorable moment of Swami Shuffle 200 2026? And we're going to start with the rookies. So we're going to start with Daniel Diaz.
Oh my gosh. Well, the most memorable moment for me was let's just say the barrier island, and I snuck up on those people and I asked for a restroom, and then when I walked out, it decided to start snowing. And I was like, is it really snowing in Virginia Beach? Am I in the right place? And how much longer do I got till my rest area? That was probably the wildest I could have imagined that day, and probably the wildest moment of the whole race. I was not anticipating snow at all.
All right, so living an ultra life, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Doing hard things, but doing things worthwhile with others. And this kind of matches the criteria for like doing something challenging at the same time taking yourself out of the comfort zone, and then being able to explore and seek adventure.
Yeah, awesome. All right, let's go, Eric. Most memorable moment.
I think the most memorable moment is when we decided to, when I joined you for the finish, basically. When we started everyone together and we stick together for the whole stretch to the finish. It's like the third or fourth time I had that experience finishing with other people. And it's always amazing getting to the finish line with more than one people. It's just crazy the sense that you have. It's a good accomplishment sense that you have when you finish with multiple people.
Awesome. And living an ultra life, first thing that pops into your head.
Doing crazy stuff.
There you go. I like that. All right, Steve.
When we got to the border and the four of us were cutting up and talking about the flying penguins and the eagles and all the other crazy stuff we were coming up with, and we were just laughing and laughing at ourselves, laughing at each other, and just enjoying the moment. That was awesome. The finish line was a great experience. Again, just to make such great and fast friends and to go across the finish line as a family, people have endured for 6 days straight. To be able to share that with each other was way better than going across that finish line by yourself. That was great.
Right, living an ultra life.
For me, it's always that saying, living outside your comfort zone. That's where life begins. I'm a firm believer in pushing yourself physically, mentally, and with relationships with yourself, with others, with God. We're not set on this earth to be comfortable. I think we're set to push our limits and find new boundaries, you know.
Awesome. Awesome. Kip, most memorable moment.
I'm pretty sure I don't qualify, but I will say that the first time four guys walked up to the door of my van, a bunch of guys I didn't know, that suddenly I became part of your lives, and was it was very humbling, the gratitude that I was getting, when it was really very little effort on my part, and I could see the amount of effort that you guys were putting into it. It's very humbling to see that.
Awesome. Living an ultra life, first thing that pops in your head.
Again, it's really, it's really unbelievable to me, because it's not something that's really part of my life, but to see it up close, and to see people pushing themselves like that, I mean, I watched you guys for days falling apart, and then to see you guys all arm in arm crossing the finish line together, just walking that last mile with you, and hearing you guys laughing and talking and cutting up, and seeing the sort of bonds that you guys had formed was really kind of neat too.
Cool. Lois and Jim.
Oh boy, I could go on forever, but I think for me, at the very end, seeing you all, the picture of you all crossing the finish line, because in essence, with the exception of maybe Steve, I'm not sure, but we did see Skip's van that we liked. We had touched each of you at some point during this race, right? Like, we first, and whether Joel remembers or not, like, I handed him a towel when he got off the beach in Corolla to dry his feet, and he was just like, "Are you sure?" And I was like, "That's why I bring them, And again, Eric, we met on the beach road that day when we were coming to see the four of you, who have become like our family, right? So, like, the whole group became our family. So seeing that picture of you all crossing together was just perfection for me.
Awesome. And living an ultra life.
I would say a little selfish, but selfless, and the best of human kindness.
Awesome. Awesome. Joel Herman.
Well, I do remember you, Lois and Jim, so thank you very much for the towel. My most memorable, probably defining moment of Swami 2026 was had to be the post office, where I was done, and I told Coastie that I'm done. I don't think I can go on. And slept for 5 hours, woke up, and I was good to go. And I never had that thought in my mind again after that. It was
Awesome.
I'm finishing. So that was my most defining moment. Living in an ultra life, hey, pushing those boundaries, challenging myself, and this is a small community of ultra people, and those brothers and sisters that you meet along the way to help you out. That is just it's amazing to me, and I'm glad that there's people out there like that to that will pick you up when you need to be picked up and help you get across the finish line. So thank you all for that.
Awesome. And Mike Edwards.
Probably about the same as what everyone else does. The human kindness of people. Skip, who I'm a complete stranger to, he's offering me all kinds of stuff and food wise. I walk into the Hilton, and the first thing Lois says is, "Take all your clothes off." And I'm thinking, "Am I going to get my clothes back?" The pants I was using kind of tore up my knees. So Jim and Lois really fixed me up on there. I know we were going towards the KOA, and I remember talking. I think we were stopped at the P Island, and I took off because I got a hold of a girl named Kim, who is the manager at Goodwin's right before the KOA, and she says, "I will stay open till 7:30, but you got to be here by 7:30." So I got there. I think I got there like 7:25. I put in five hamburger orders. I was customer number three for the entire day,
Wow.
and then I know Peter had ordered something else. I think it might have been with Eric, but we might have made their cash flow. But similar to the Liberty, they could have closed hours beforehand, and we would have re really been screwed
Yeah.
going into the KOA. So it's just you watch the news; it's doom and gloom. But you get out there, and people really are very decent people, and they really want to see you smile, happy, Jim has no problems touching disgusting feet. So I watched him rub your feet. So Lois is inspiration. I was would have loved a piece of cake. I was just completely dead. I needed some sleep, and I was struggling with staying asleep. But this race and all the other four other races, it's just the human element of Tyler coming out middle of nowhere and opening up his trunk and just giving aid to us. So I can't appreciate that any better. So
There you go. Living an ultra life. First thing pops into your head.
camaraderie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how many aspens and that I got from Peter or from Danny, or stuff like that. It's just really, good people. So.
Right. And I saved the glue for last. The man who I think encouraged every single one of us. And Peter, I know I thank you from the bottom of my heart. You really, really made this race special. You're a really, really incredibly special man. And I'm honored to have the privilege to get to move with you. So tell us your most memorable moment there, Mr. Glue.
I was really surprised that Lewis and Jim waited for me on that Corolla Beach. I never expect that. And that was shocking. And also asked me what I need. And coffee or tea. I really like the tea that really hit the spot. And then we went to the lighthouse and Jeannie waiting for us with a heating pad, and the three of them has a food, clothes. Lois even gave me hot fuzzy gloves that's so warm, and that was like wow. I mean, they are good people out there. Like I hardly know Lois and Jim because I met at them in the aid station last year at the Black Bear. And I still couldn't eat that time. I just talking and we were joking around about life, and I went pretty deep with the conversation with Lois and Jim about life. And so, yeah, and they show him like that. I couldn't believe it. I'm blown away, and that was a big part for me. And Jeannie left all the food for me, and then she even noticed that I'm sort of vegetarian, so and let the cup that miso ramen soup, like wow, that's the one that I love, and that's really made it, yeah, that's unbelievable. Also, Skip too, like he doesn't have to help me and give me anything, but he did, and Tyler, like those people make a big difference for me. It's not like physical challenge. I can take a beating, but this kindness, really take it like a really deep in my heart that, really appreciate everything.
Awesome. Living an ultra life.
Well, I'm always living on the edge. So, and one of my friend just passed away last year. He's a true badass ultra runner. He always say that fuck the comfort zone. That's how I am. And when I get in trouble, I always remember what he's told me when we run together. And he's gone. So I living, I stay living with him in my heart.
That's awesome. Well, gentlemen and Lois, thank you so much. This is going to be a classic Living an Ultra Life podcast. Thank you so much, gentlemen. This has been awesome.
Thank you,
All
guys.
Thank
right.
you.
Thanks,
Thanks, buddy.
everybody.
Thank you.
All
See you
right.
all.
That'll be a wrap for this week's episode of Living an Ultra Life. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.